You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com, powered by Last Word on Sports Incorporated, the Beautiful Game Network, Roughneck Scarves, and Icarus FC. It is Tuesday, September 8th, 2020. I am joined now by my good friend Daniel Sperry. Dan, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good, man. I had a fun... Labor Day weekend, had some friends from college come into town. My wife took the baby down to a boathouse down in Arkansas with her grandparents and her mom. It's a really long story that I'm not going to get into as to why I was not going. But yeah, let's just say other decisions were made by other people that were potentially going to go, and then chose not to go at the last second, and I had already made plans with a lot of people while I was not planning on going, and and so then I was left in a lurch, either go down with family or cancel on people that were coming in from out of town and had already squared everything away, so chose to stay in town, which I think was a fun choice and a good choice, an enjoyable Labor Day weekend, taught someone how to golf. Got them hooked into the stupidity that is spending money to go frustratingly swing a stick at a ball and try and put it in a very small cup. But it was a lot of fun. I ate a lot of food. I'm paying for it today. But there's a Salvadorian restaurant down the street called El Pulgarcito, which is the little toe or the little thumb. They have incredible pupusas, like really, really, really good pupusas. And so we went and we got a bunch, it's been so long since I've eaten there. I forgot how hot their hot sauce was, and I like doused my pupusa in it. And if any of you like know what a pupusa is, it soaks up any kind of liquid that you put on it. It's a little bit more, it's like a pancake with meat inside of it basically, and it soaked up that hot sauce, and I was like crying and burping, and oh man, it was so good, but it was so painful, and it's been a while. I hope your Labor Day weekend wasn't as simultaneously joyful and painful as mine was.
All right, well, good stuff. Anyways, Dan, we've got a lot to talk about, but first to address, I guess we can get into this for last words. This is probably the last podcast we'll record prior to the start of the Premier League season, so Dan, I have to ask you about the Manchester United third. How much begging or pleading or goodwill karma was expended when Manchester United or whatever personnel had to go Beckham, get him one of these third kits, get him to put it on and be photographed while wearing it? This is, if you haven't seen this, folks, this is 90s MLS fashion, yeah. Level wonderful, and I love hate it, and I can't wait for the memes that come out once they actually wear this in a competitive game, Daniel.
Yeah, I love the kit, honestly. I actually do. I really think it looks kind of fun. I hate the shorts. I wish that the shorts would have just been like a little bit more simple, but the shorts are just as bonkers as the top, and it looks really weird right around the player's crotch, and it's like really drawing attention to the player's crotch, and to me, I'm kind of like, if you just gone a little bit mute there and like made the shorts like a little bit normal, the top itself, I actually really enjoy the top. The shorts though with it, like, just make my head hurt looking at it. But Yeah, dude, that the you know, we always try and talk about the kit MLS kits when they come out, and this would be one that we would like absolutely dump on, and then like 2 years later we'd be like, oh man, remember when the Columbus Crew put out that kit that was their city flag and was horrendous? Like that, like that's what, like that, that's what this kit's gonna be, if we had a Premier League podcast, which we don't. But yeah, I don't know how I feel about it.
I agree with you, Dan. I think, as I mentioned earlier, you know, there's a love-hate aspect to it. And I agree with you that this is something that there's going to be a lot of really big hot takes about right now, and that it could actually become like a cult favorite kit amongst Premier League fans or amongst Manchester United fans as it ages. So for those of you who haven't actually seen the kit, it looks like it's diagonal, black and white zebra stripes, but then there's different chunks that are like more zoomed in, so the stripes are thicker, and so there's like very jagged rough edges with it. But one thing that I don't particularly like about it, Dan, I agree with you that it's really jarring the entire kit as it is. I think if they went with something simpler for the socks and simpler for the shorts, it would be a little bit less stressful and painful on the eyes. You know, maybe just like fewer stripes or just like a half black, half white shorts, for example, and then make the socks like simple monotone, I think would work a little bit better. But, you know, it's loud, it's crazy, it's out there. And I'm glad to see Manchester United trying to outdo the Kansas City Wiz and the old school LA Galaxy kit, Dan. But Dan, let's get into actual MLS soccer, and we will reprise our segment of red light, yellow light, green light. And so obviously there's been a bunch of games going on. Some teams have been playing two games a week, so it's kind of hard to just look at it at an individual week basis with the chaos that is this new MLS regular season schedule. So, Dan, I will throw it to you. Since last we podcasted, who are you giving your red lights to?
So my red lights are going to go to first off, we'll start with New York Red Bulls. Since Atlanta United fired, Frank DeBoer, before we really dug into these second rounds of games. Now, RBNY, Red Bull New York, are the only team that have fired their manager since. And Chris Armas has been around for a long time with that organization. They chose to get rid of him over the way the results were going. They haven't been good. They lost to, I believe it was DC United, who have been absolutely horrendous. And I know you're going to touch on that here in a second. But, like, DC United have been one of the worst teams to watch. Like, not only with your with my eyeballs, but, like, with, like the soccer brain as well. Like, it's just, they are so miserable. And they lost to them at home. They have not played well at all since they came back. They have continued to regress as a team. Now, some of this is due to the fact that there's a large amount of quality that they have lost off their roster from when they went down last season when BWP goes. They kind of made their run in 2018. Pushing Atlanta, beat Atlanta for the Supporters Shield, broke Toronto FC's record at that point in 2018. And then in 2019, it was a massive regression with a lot of those players on the field. So, you know, you kind of look at the way things have gone for them the last few weeks. It's been not very good. And, you know, I don't know if it, I'm curious to see what their current GM wants, because this is not the GM that hired Chris Armas to replace Jesse Marsh when Jesse Marsh went over to Europe. This is a completely different person in charge. So this is going to be his manager that he has to live or die on. And his team, this roster, is wide open for him to do it. So then the question in the end will be, you know, the year that you let Chris Armas be your manager, you won everything. And then last year, Chris Armas won everything in the regular season. In typical Red Bulls fashion, they did not in the postseason. But, you know, we all know what happened there. 2019, a bit of a regression, a bit of a roster turnover. Now there's a ton of roster turnover and more regression, and so they kick Armas to the curb. what happens now is going to be all on the GM and will very likely potentially vindicate Armas in a lot of these things. I think Armas deserves a job as a coach somewhere, and whatever team goes and hires him as a coach, not as necessarily as a manager, but as a coach for their coaching staff, whatever team goes and does that is going to be a better team than they were the day before they hired him. Armas is a very good coach. Players like him. Players respond well to him, and he's very, very smart. Being a manager is a little bit different, though, than being an assistant coach, and there's a lot of assistants who have been great assistants and very highly touted assistants that can't cut it as a manager because it is a very different quality that is required of that person. To my other red light, the San Jose Earthquakes. Matt said off air, so we're going to reprise Dan's Quakes rant. My rant, again, it's starting to get shorter and shorter, because at this point, it's just me repeating the same things over and over. I mean, Matias Almeida, home run manager. Spend some money, for the love of God. Any failure on this team now is on Jesse Fiorinelli, not Matias Almeida. And Jesse Fiorinelli, by only spending to retain Espinoza and then going out and getting pretty much the same exact result, carbon copy, with the 2019 Earthquakes as 2018 Earthquakes, because it's the same team. The only thing that they added was a out of contract Osvaldo Alanis. That's it. And their goalkeeper Daniel Vega has been miserable. They continually get shredded by LAFC. Now they put out a relatively decent performance. I know they just lost their captain at number 10 in Magnus Eriksson. Put out a relatively decent performance against Colorado. Maybe should have won that game because they had some really good chances outside of the penalty kick. Honestly, the same could be said for Colorado in that one, though. The draw was pretty much a deserved result. But you're looking at this team and you're saying, okay, where are they? They're not as bad as Vancouver, but they're not as good as Portland, Seattle, LA. So where are they at? Are they in the Minnesota range? Are they in the FC Dallas range, where we're not really quite sure what we've got with these guys? I feel like that's where they're at, and that's exactly where they were at last year, and they missed out on the postseason because of that. And again, this all falls on the GM, Jesse Fiorinelli, who to this point the only good decision he has made as a GM is to hire Matias Almeida. And so at this point, my question is, how long is the leash for Jesse Fiorinelli? I'm curious, because this is his last year of his contract. I can't, if the Earthquakes don't end up better this season than they were last year, I can't see Fiorinelli sticking around, because that's not how that's not how John Fisher works. As little as he spends and seems to care and invest his personal time with his teams, he does not deal with regression, and he cuts off the loose ends when the regression happens. And to me, looks like Jesse Fiorinelli will continue will end up being the odd man out if they don't get it done. So Matt, I kept my Quakes rant to as short as I can. So tell me your red lights.
Oh, that was well done, Daniel, on working on being less loquacious than you and I historically are on this podcast. So I'm going to start with Atlanta United. We'll get to this in the roundtable, Dan. They've had a major departure from their team, and depending on whether or not you put stock in Latin, South American, Spanish soccer rumor tabloids, they could potentially have another major departure. Still unlikely Jose Martinez participates in any form of what this 2020 season looks like. And have they simplified things under the interim manager? Yes. Are they really any better or more dynamic, more aesthetically pleasing, or better in terms of results than what they were in Orlando? I mean, yeah, they've won a game. but really that's about it. And so this is a club that for me, Dan, for the first time in their history, is facing real adversity. Their first year, they make the playoffs, they look good, they play fun soccer. They obviously, you know, the club and the city as a soccer city, Atlanta, shattered a lot of misconceptions about what Atlanta was going to be like when MLS announced that they were going there. Year two, they win MLS Cup. Year three, yeah, they had some up and down moments. They get bounced by a really, really good Toronto FC team in the playoffs. But look, they won an Open Cup, they won Champions Cup, make what you will. The fact is they still won hardware and still at times they played aesthetically pleasing soccer, even if there was very clearly a rift between management and the style of play and what the players had wanted. And just, you know, Frank de Boer being a octagonal piece trying to fit into, you know, any other hole shape, any other shaped hole. And so now I don't know what they are. They need to hire their head coach. Darren Eales has come out and said that they are looking at adding key pieces that are going to replace Peter Martinez. And if they do sell Ezequiel Barco, replace him prior to that next head coach signing. How that works, unless they're actively scouting head coaches that fit more in the Tata Martino mold, and it's just going to be having to deal with it and hoping that, you know, the how they sign the players will inform the interview questions that they ask of candidates of how do you think about this roster? Do you like it? And if the answer is yeah, I love Jose Martinez. I love whichever players you have as your DPs. You know, I like, you know, Eric Rometty, for example, then great. You know, we'll consider you. And if not, we're not going to consider you. But my question at this point is what the plan? You don't want to hire a head coach right now. That's fine. But I think it's, you know, this is the first like Atlanta United fans, Dan, were born with a black and gold silver spoon in their mouth. And this is the first time they're seeing adversity. And every single time that, you know, that you have to make a big change like that, and when you don't have continuity in terms of some of your major pieces, in terms of your talent and in terms of your coaching staff, and that from the top down having the same plan and ethos, either conceptually or literally, tactically, makes things extremely difficult. So are they going out and trying to find the next Tata Martino, Matias Almeida, that is coaching somewhere in Argentina, Brazil, somewhere else in Central and South America? Great. But you're going to go about acquiring your designated players prior to potentially signing that person. And just the lack of continuity gives me cause for pause. I guess the one thing that they do have going for them, as we'll get to in the roundtable, Dan, is the financial aspects of some of their departures. But I mean, this is a team that right now, they've lost Arlington Nagby. They lost LGP. Brad Uzan isn't the same keeper that he used to be. This is a team at a serious talent deficit outside of Jose Martinez right now. And so I don't know what they look like. And short of getting Jose Martinez back, home run hire as a head coach, and another home run DP signing, I don't know that this is the MLS 3.0 super club that we were thinking they could be. The other one is a team at a very different end of the spectrum, Dan, albeit a team that is also above the red line in the Eastern Conference, and that is DC United. Dan, I'm going to read out from you in calendar order DC United's results since the MLS's back tournament ended. Their first game back, they drew FC Cincinnati 0-0. They lost to New England Revolution 2-1. New England finished the game with 10 men in that one. They got blasted by the Philadelphia Union 4-1. One of the worst, you know, about as bad as Benny Ball can go when you're at a talent deficit against Philly. That's how bad it went. They beat New York Red Bulls, as you mentioned a couple minutes ago. And then they drew NYCFC on Sunday, Dan, which I don't know when you saw, but I mean, at New York City FC, I think had a bajillion shot attempts, albeit only 4 on goal to DC United's 0.
True bajillion.
Yeah, true bajillion. So yeah, what is that? I don't know. How many zeros do we think bajillion should have on it, Dan? Like, it's 10 to the power of what? I don't know that bajillion's actually a number, but like, we should come up. Like, it should be an odd number. It should be weird. It should be like 13 zeros. In any case, so this is a team that continues to play uninspiring soccer, Dan. This is a team, okay, yeah, Paul Ariel is hurt. They're having to do some creative things due to injuries in terms of where Julian Gressel is playing on the field. But this is a team that undoubtedly has talent. And this is a team that is not playing like a upgraded, more properly funded, more experienced, better gelling version of Benny Ball. This is a team that is flat out playing 5 men at the back and still refusing to play soccer. You know, this would be like, like Tottenham Hotspurs playing Burnley's style of play. And okay, yeah, Jose Mourinho likes to park the bus and everything, but at some point he tries to have some form of attacking soccer. But just my genuine question at this point, Mark, other than the New York Red Bulls game, in which given the way those two teams played, you know, I can understand them going for it. I just, this is a team that if you ask me what are they trying to set out based on how they're playing, my response to that is a gritty, unenthusiastic, extremely stressful 0-0 draw is their end game. And so I don't know how you fix it at this point, given they've made roster changes. The talent is certainly there, albeit, yes, they're playing in 2020, which will come with it a bajillion asterisks onto it. And so but I mean, at some point, I genuinely have to wonder, in terms of the career arc, the experience, and everything, what Ben Olsen is thinking and really what the plan is for this team, other than to try and lead the league in clean sheets, make the playoffs with the fewest number of goals scored of those playoff teams, and just hope you can get four road 1-0 results on the way to winning MLS Cup. You know, I know a lot of our listeners probably don't like Alexi Lalas, Dan, but some of his ethos and some of his ideas I do agree with, and one of which he talks about when getting to the World Cup, whether it's the U.S. or other people's, if we're not there trying to win it, even if we don't believe that we actually can, but improve upon our previous historical performances at the World Cup, why are we here? And at this point, I genuinely have to wonder, Ben Olsen, if you're not going, I don't think you're going out and putting this team to try and be competitive, to do anything that is either effective, entertaining, or can actually get results, why are you here? Why is DC United? And so in that, obviously, they made a bunch of changes to the roster. They brought in, a new stadium. And yes, that stadium can't be filled right now, but the finances of this club are stabilized for the next. This point, Dan, and the one constant that you've had this entire time of a team that hasn't been fun to watch, hasn't been particularly good at times. And it's just been, the one thing that malign on Twitter, and that is Benny Ball Olsen out. And so I'm not calling for his head, but I don't know that there's anything else this club can do to change things. That is the simplest choice for them to do is to take out Ben Olsen and put somebody in with a better philosophy. And I don't have a quicker solution to that at that point. With that, Dan, let's get a little bit less red in the face, get out this red mist, and let's get to yellow light. Dan, I'll throw it to you.
Yeah, so first up for me is going to be Minnesota United. I'm not quite sure what to expect from them. They lost three straight. They've lost lost every single game since the return up until this weekend when they thrashed Real Salt Lake. So I was quite curious to figure out what on earth is this Minnesota United team, because at times they've looked good, but then Houston shredded them, FC Dallas shredded them, Sporting Kansas City beat them in Minnesota, they drew, and then they absolutely thrashed Real Salt Lake this weekend. So we did just get the arrival of Reynoso. We saw a flash from him a little bit in this game, but overall, I still just don't know what to expect from this team. They're up, they're down. They haven't gotten no Aiko Parra back. There's just a lot of inconsistencies. Some games Chase Gasper's great. Some days he's getting lit up. Sometimes their attack looks like it's going to score every single chance that it takes, and sometimes it looks like they can't even muster to create one chance. So, continues to be a massive question mark, as is the case for every Adrian Heath team. I figure, for Minnesota to be able to keep up their underdog shtick, they got to lose a bunch of games for a while to kind of gain back that underdog feel. So they did that and they got a win. So the question remains, how long do they remain underdogs for Adrian Heath? Or does that type of preaching from the manager finally wear thin on the players? Who knows? But the other team I got a big question mark is LAFC. They also got a win over the week, but they lost to Seattle, to LA Galaxy twice now. I got a lot of big question marks for this LAFC team. They are rambunctious in going forward, but they become relatively predictable. And what, you know, some teams have figured out a way to defend them. You can foul the heck out of them. That is one way to do it. But LAFC continually, without Carlos Vela there, they continuously get the ball to Diego Rossi. That is the end game. So if you can move Diego Rossi farther away from the goal and make sure that he is only picking up the ball outside of the 18-yard box, you are limiting the damage that Diego Rossi can do, because at this moment, the only damage that LAFC can do to anyone is through Diego Rossi. Now, they can do plenty of damage to themselves with their own defending. That has been miserable. That's been documented all season long. They gave Cisniega a chance to beat out Kenneth Vermeer, who has also been horrible for the most of the season after they dumped Tyler Miller. Vermeer has not looked good at all. Of the multiple goalkeepers that were brought into the league, he probably looks like one of the worst that came into the league. Like, I genuinely think that the LA Galaxy, with David Bingham, have a better goalkeeper than the LAFC have with Kenneth Vermeer, Champions League and Dutch national team veteran. Like, that's where we're at with that, and that is not good. If David Bingham is better than your goalkeeper, you don't have a very good goalkeeper. You know, like, David Bingham's not bad, but he's like the lowest bar of league average, I feel like there is for most keepers. And so if you're below that, you're below league average, and that's not good. So they've given young Cisniega a chance. I've always liked watching Cisniega. I actually thought he was better than Tyler Miller on occasion last year. He can make a insane amount of saves. It's a matter of whether or not he can command the area and be the big vocal leader that you need at the back line. If he can pick up those, he'll be great for them, but that doesn't fix the fact that they traded away Walker Zimmerman for Garber Bucks, and Garber Bucks don't win championships. Having Walker Zimmerman as your center back might, though, make that difference when you are LAFC. Not going to make that difference for Nashville, but he will make that difference for a team like LAFC. So to trade away your captain, your stalwart in the middle of the field, makes zero sense. You know, the sooner the better. The sooner that they can get someone in there who's like relatively competent, the better. But you know, banking on Dejan Jakovic as your center back just isn't going to cut it. And we're kind of seeing it exposed against some of these better teams in the league, like Portland got a good one over on LA. Seattle got a really good one over on LA, and so did the LA twice. So I'm very intrigued to see what happens with LAFC before, but fine, adversity strikes LAFC for the first time, since them coming into the league, pretty much.
Yeah,
the only adversity, like, there might've been like a bit of a striker crunch when Dio went on that like substance abuse list thing, but it wasn't for that. It was first, they just MLS ruled the substance abuse list just to try and like allow him to leave, I guess, for something. There was a bunch of weird stuff that happened with that, but like when he was on that list and was gone for like a month or so dealing with whatever he was dealing with, it made like they had a bit of a striker crunch, but that's about it. That's really about it at this point. So I'm, you know, first bit of adversity for LAFC, how do they handle it? Do they just spend money and paper over the cracks, or does Bob Bradley make some changes to how they go about things stylistically? Because at the moment, that might be the best solution, especially in the middle of a pandemic.
Well said, Dan. To your point about Garber Bucks not winning championships, I can't remember. This is either a quote attributed to Roy Keane when he was at Manchester United, or possibly Johan Cruyff, I believe, is a manager at Ajax, where he said he's never seen a transfer fee score a goal, which I think is a good point. So my yellow lights, Dan, are the Portland Timbers and the New England Revolution. We will start with the Portland Timbers. Since the MLS is back tournament, they lost 3-0 to Seattle Sounders. That game got away from them. Two of those goals were effectively garbage goals. They had the crazy 4-4 draw against Real Salt Lake with RSL playing under the specter of what happened with Dolo Hansen that we talked about last podcast. They lost to the LA Galaxy in ignominious fashion, and they did beat the Seattle Sounders on the weekend on Sunday by a score of 2-1. During and after the MLS is back tournament, Dan, I mentioned that this might be the most inconsistent. When they are hot, they are unbeatable. When they are not a playoff team in Major League Soccer. And we saw that they were extremely efficient. They were extremely pragmatic and extremely clinical in the MLS's back tournament. And they've obviously had some inconsistencies. They've scored a lot. But obviously, they've also let in a lot of goals since the regular season has come back, as we'll get to in the roundtable. They've got some missing pieces. And so I still think there can be some inconsistencies from this team at time. This is still a team that, in terms of being a contender in the Western Conference, Dan, still has, for me, a talent deficiency at center back, and still has some extreme inconsistencies from Steve Clark, who can sometimes be the most wonderful drunk MLS present that exists. And so I still have some doubts about this team. I still think this is a team that will make the playoffs. I think this is a team that just on talent alone can make it. If nothing else, Diego Valeri can LeBron Portland to the playoffs. But this was a team that we thought was going to come out potentially all guns blazing after the MLS back tournament has not. And so the question is then, can they do enough to actually make the playoffs, and can they round back into form in time for the playoffs to chase a second MLS Cup? My other yellow light is New England Revolution, Dan, who I think Bruce Arena's done a very good job in terms of managing them. I think he's brought back a much more stable locker room environment than they ever had under Brad Friedel. When they get chances to Gustavo Bowe in high volumes, he will score goals, and that will put them in a position to get results. But obviously, with the acquisition of Lee Wynn coming back to the Revs for effectively a song from Inter Miami, that does not bode well for me in terms of Carlos Heel availability, and Heel is the Achilles heel Revolution in terms of what they want to do offensively. And this is still a team that I wonder, just given the state of the market, are they going to be able to add somebody during this transfer window, which is open until the beginning of October, if I'm last I checked. And so I still think this is a team that absolutely has the key pieces. They have the defensive structure, they have the right manager who can sort of see this through from an emotional us being together and being on the same page and being well prepared standpoint. But I'm worried a little bit about chance creation with a team that is just so reliant on Gustavo Bowe. Gustavo Bowe is many wonderful things, but 2013, 2014, Robbie Keane, he is not. And so for that reason, I'm kind of wondering about Portland and New England, who I think going into this season, we're right on that bubble of, could they be a major contender for trophies, or are they just going to be a competitive lock for a playoff team, and we'll see if they can do anything. Right now, both of these teams are teetering to where the error bars for me at the lowest, how I have them just missing the playoffs, and I think at best they are the third man at the table of the contenders nightclub for MLS Cup in their respective conferences. Dan?
So my green light goes to Houston Dynamo, the fighting, flying, super Houston Dynamo, who have just been on an absolute tear as of late. They are climbing the Western Conference standings at a pretty rapid pace. They've won majority of their games since coming back from the MLS's back tournament. Tao Ramos should be applauded. We saw the first two games of Tab Ramos, and there wasn't, it looked pretty rough. Then we got to MLS's back, and it's like, okay, there's a little bit of something there. We saw it, they just narrowly lost to Portland. They kind of tied with the Galaxy in that wild game where everybody was dying on legs. And then, they had the very high scoring back and forth with LAFC, but the signs were there that some things were coming together. Then they came out and just started thrashing people throughout this entire return to play. And they've been really, really good. And a lot of it has had to do with the fact that Darwin Quintero is starting and playing a lot of minutes. And he and Albert Elise playing on either side of whoever they choose to put in at striker, whether it be Christian Ramirez, whether it be Mauro Manotas, they are creating boatloads of chances, and they're able to finish them off. And surprisingly, their back line has been really, really good about being patient and finding a ways to play out of the back while also springing the attack. That there is an intent to the possession at the back, not just we're going to knock around the ball a bit until someone comes to pressure us. It's like, okay, we're going to knock around the ball, and we're going to move it to this side and then switch. A lot of their goals have come on this really fun switch play that's a very hard left to right, where the right winger is playing in the shadow, kind of the shadow off the back shoulder of the right back. And once the right back pitches in as they overload, pinches in as they overload the box, the ball splits all the way out to right winger, whether it's Albert Delis or has been Nico Hansen in moments. And they've done this numerous times in the last few games against numerous opponents, and it's working. And it's a play that sets them up for success. Elite has got on the ball. Christian Ramirez has gotten the end of those crosses as well. So I applaud what Tab Ramos has done with this team. They're flying on form right now, and it should be appreciated. This is a Dynamo team that hopefully is a little bit different than the Wilmer Cabrera eras. There's so much emotion and passion with how they played, and a lot of times that emotion and passion bubbled up over the top. Cabrera was always an emotional and passionate guy, and that got the best out of his teams in that way. But Tab Ramos has this team clicking in a very efficient manner, and they're also still enjoying it and having fun and playing with a bit of passion. So Houston has been much improved since even the first few games of the season, and they've been on a tear right now. So they get a green light for right now just because I am pleased. I enjoy watching a Houston Dynamo game. I don't dread watching them. Like, if they're on TV or on ESPN Plus, I'm clicking on that game because I know I'm going to see some really awesome attacking soccer from them. On the flip side, New York City FC, I thought it's kind of funny. Someone was trying to use Ronnie Delia as like a butt end of the joke as like why MLS is bad, is that Ronnie Delia is a coach of a good team. But kind of negates the fact that there's a lot of really good pieces on this New York City FC team. And yes, they drew recently. If they had won, I think it would have been 4 or 5 wins in a row for them since coming back from the MLS's back tournament. And of course, they famously, I think, like won one game at the MLS back tournament to even get them into the regular season. But, you know, they or even get them into the knockout round of the MLS back. There we go. And then as we do this return to play here in the regular season, you know, they have continued their form. They've been able to get wins. They got a win against Columbus, a very good Columbus team. They got wins against a few other good teams. And then they've just been putting it away. And, you know, this is a New York City FC team that I think has been really good since the restart. I've always kind of liked this NYCFC team. I think their start was a little weird in the MLS's back tournament. They weren't fully healthy. I know even at the beginning of the regular season, they were still coming off of CONCACAF Champions League play as well and balancing MLS play while having midweeks against, you know, for must-win trophy games that Ronnie Delia was taking very seriously. So this New York City FC team has been a lot of fun to watch. I think they will continue to be a lot of fun to watch. And that you got to pay attention to these guys are the right now for my money outside of Philadelphia Union. They're probably the best team in the East, second best team in the East, maybe Toronto. I'd throw into that conversation, but Toronto, Philly, and New York City FC are, and I don't think it's quite close that those are the best teams in the Eastern Conference at this point. So, you know, Matt might have a say for shout for somebody else here, but.
All right, so Dan, we're going to talk about best teams in the Eastern Conference, and how are you not starting with the Columbus Crew, who are my Eastern Conference green light? Dan, they've played 10 games. They have 23 points. Over the course of a 34-game season, that is on pace for 78.2 points. We'll round down because I'm a mathematician, so 78 points. LAFC last year broke a regular season point total record in MLS with 72 points. Now, do I think that Columbus Crew are going to finish with 78 points, or I guess whatever that would be over the course of a 23-game season, since we're almost halfway through that season? No, but like, let's just look at it. Like, Darlington Nagbe has been a fantastic re-addition for Caleb Porter. They have a fantastic defense behind what Jonathan Mensah and Harrison Afful have been able to do. They are defending really well. They are super healthy. Jossie Zardes is scoring for fun. Lucas Zelarayan is fun. They are ZZ Top. This is a team that is clicking on all cylinders, that is embarrassing bad teams and comfortably playing well and dictating the pace against the good teams that they have played. The one caveat that I will give you, Dan, because of the way the schedule and the regionalization that we've had, Columbus Crew have not played New York City FC, who you were just mentioning. I believe they have not played.
They did play them, and they lost.
They lost. Okay, that was their one loss, so I'll give you that. They have not played Toronto FC, as Toronto is in their own Canada bubble, and maybe Toronto FC's stats are a little bit beefed up because they get to play the Montreal Impact and Vancouver Whitecaps every other game, and they've yet to play the Philadelphia Union. But the fact is, this is a team that the most important, only thing that matters right now is picking up points, and this is a team that is comfortably doing that against bad teams and still playing well and getting results against good teams. And so I think any questions that we had about whether or not this team was going to fall off after their disappointment losing to the hopeless underdogs that are Minnesota United in the MLS's back tournament, I think has to be thrown away. And then I think this is a team that, you know, I won't make any predictions about this season, Dan, but, you know, we've heard and we've gotten confirmation from the ownership group with some of the moves that they made that they're willing to spend a little bit more money. We've seen the updated renderings of the new Columbus Crew Stadium. This is a team that is ready for my money, Dan, to go into a rebrand a la Sporting Kansas City. You know, what was that, 2010, 2011? Correct me if I'm wrong, Dan. Dan's nodding, folks. You know, are ready to go into that. I'll say starting with Caleb Porter's hiring and then going into next year with the opening, as soon as they're able to open up the new stadium and have it at full capacity, whatever time that is, they're in a great position. And I think what they've been able to do since resuming the regular season is just proof of concept from what we already thought they were going to be based on who they had on paper and what they were able to achieve in Orlando in the group stage. And then my other green light, Dan, is the LA Galaxy, who currently sit fourth in the Western Conference. They have won four games in a row. They have beaten the Portland Timbers. They have beaten the San Jose Earthquakes, and they've beaten LAFC twice. So if we're counting El Tráfico with the three games so far, the LA Galaxy have two wins and LAFC only have one. Granted, I think they might be level on goal difference. I can't remember with the 6-2 that LAFC had in Orlando. This is still a team that I question whether or not they're going to be sustainable, but they've established a style of play, Dan, post Zlatan Ibrahimovic that is repeatable, and they've simplified things at the back. I think Julian Araujo has been great. I think Insua has been much improved. They've gotten Pipo Gonzalez out of the starting lineup, and that was fantastic for them. I think they're set up much better defensively. I think Perry Kitchen is looking like the guy who got sold for almost $1 million, I think, from DC United to Scotland several years ago. Jonathan Dos Santos is back. He is healthy, and Pavone is getting to run the offense in a way that is fun for him, in a way that is creative and complements and brings out the best in him, in a way where he is unequivocally the man, which is something that he was looking for when he came to the LA Galaxy to play for GBS and wanting to leave Boca Juniors. I have some curiosities about whether or not Sebastian Legette and his recent form, he'll be able to maintain that. I'm curious to see what this team looks like and if there's a change in shape or tactics or style of play when Chicharito gets back healthy and comes into play. Because at this point, Dan, Ethan Zubak's job is basically to just make sure at least one of the center backs is occupied mentally with him at all times, to the point where the other two center backs aren't constantly looking for what's Legette doing on the wing, what is Christian Pavone doing on the wing. But everything was doom and gloom after what happened in Orlando. We thought that the Stars were hurt and they were mailing it in. There are questions about whether or not GBS was actually, you know, understood MLS or was actually going to be able to get this team in a winning way. They have simplified things. They have gotten healthy. They have brought out the best in their best attacking players. And I think it's just a matter of can they continue to play well on their counterattack in transition, largely on the ground once they get into the final third and have Chicharito be an effective scorer. If they're able to do that, I think they're a lock for a playoff team, and I would have them as a dark horse. So maybe not in that top three cohort in the Western Conference, in which I personally right now, Dan, would put Sporting Kansas City, Seattle Sounders, and TBD about who would fit into that. But I'd have the Galaxy probably fourth in that middle tier of, if they're healthy and they get a little bit of luck and they're able to upset somebody on the road, could definitely go on to make MLS Cup. So the LA Galaxy are my other green light. Dan, let's throw it to the round table. As we mentioned earlier, there's some bad injury or there's some interesting transfer news for Atlanta United. Talk to me about what's happening, what could happen, and what it all means.
Yeah, Petey Martinez is gone. He's partying in Saudi Arabia, as one can party in Saudi Arabia. I don't know what that entails, but when you're making three times the salary you were making in America, but doing so in Saudi Arabia, you're making a lot of money, so enjoy that. PT Martinez, look, Atlanta United were given a chance to make a massive or make a good profit off of their transfer for PT Martinez, and PT Martinez was given an opportunity to make three times as much as he was, which probably would not have been the case if he went to Europe. And at this point, the European dream for PT Martinez in terms of being a breakout star over there was just never really going to happen. If it was, it was going to happen directly from River Plate to Europe, not from River Plate to Atlanta for a couple of years and then at 27 or 28 go to Europe. That's not how you make your money there. So Martinez, capitalized on his chance to make a whole lot of money and set up his family for generations, as well as Atlanta United were given a chance to make a profit. Now, on a player who is able to not only potentially make Atlanta a profit slash break even on that direct transfer, but has a bright future in Europe and is on the young enough side to do so, Ezequiel Barco is rumored to have interest from Sevilla for the player. I believe the deal coming in would actually allow them to break even based on everything else that they would have to pay out this year. The transfer fee to Independiente in Argentina, the percentage of the sell-on fee dropped from 30% to 10%. So now this is now it's only 10% of the transfer fee to go there. So they send $1.8 million to Independiente to get Barco over to Sevilla, as well as then they make their own profit off of it, pay out agents and all that kind of stuff. They end up with a net zero on that, which means on the PT Martinez and Barco deals combined, that Atlanta United would have made a net $0 or would have made a net profit. I think it would be a good move. Sevilla is a fantastic club for Barco to go to. They will, some of their main playmakers are starting to phase out in terms of age, but there is a whole host of Argentine contingent that plays for this Sevilla side, and Lucas Ocampos, Ezequiel Garay, but goodness, the name is Ever Benega, and a few others that are stars for that Sevilla side all seem to be Argentinian. So I think it would be a good spot for him to go. He'd have a few countrymen to go with and play people that he's familiar with, like Lucas Ocampos, that he played with in Argentina and such. So I think it would be a good move. Hopefully that one happens, not for the sake of, Atlanta lose Ezequiel Barco. But Ezequiel Barco going to Sevilla for $18 million and succeeding is a very, very, very good thing for Major League Soccer.
Mm-hmm. And then the other roundtable talk we have that I will take, Ken, is the reports that we got out today confirming that Sebastian Blanco did tear his ACL. He went down early in the first half against the Seattle Sounders on Sunday night. He was shown on the sidelines getting treatment from the training staff after being subbed, but not moving from that spot where he had plopped out on the other side of the field in tears. And then he was shown coming out of the locker room at halftime wearing crutches, presumably out for the rest of the season. And this is obviously a major blow is for me, Dan. He was their best player in the MLS's back tournament. I think this probably puts to rest, at least for the rest of this season, whether or not Diego Valeri is going to be a super sub for the Portland Timbers. I think he comes in and has to be a starter without some of the dynamic opportunities. I also think this probably not locks in, but we've seen Jeremy Bobasi be effective as an underneath and as a wide player. And then their striker, whose name I can't remember how to pronounce, that I feel bad about.
Niaskoda.
Thank you, Daniel. In terms of him probably being the lockdown number nine, just due to needing numbers. I still think the Portland Timbers are going to be okay. They have that defensive structure with the Chara brothers and Williamson, who's really come alive in the last couple of months. Diego Valeri is still capable of playing over the course of a game or several games at an MLS pace, at a MVP pace. I would not pick him to be MVP for the rest of this season. And this is still a team that can score a lot of goals and be extremely clinical with their opportunities. But I think right now for them, it's figuring out a plan in terms of personnel. And if there's any little tinkering that Giovanni Savarese wants to do, given that Blanco will not be coming back for the rest of the season, and then probably getting the team a little bit better back on track in terms of their defensive structure, not be conceding as many goals. If they do that, they'll be all right. As I mentioned earlier, I still have them being a playoff team. But with this and some of the other issues they've had since then, they're still very much a yellow light for me. And so is this a team that can go on to be a contender in the MLS playoffs, as we saw them having already lifted a trophy and qualified for Champions League next year? That will remain to be seen. With that, Dan, let us go on to predictions, and we will start this Saturday in Chester, PA. Philadelphia Union will be hosting the New England Revolution at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Dan, who you got and why?
I'm going to take Philadelphia Union just because I think they're the better team. I'll say 2-0 for the Union.
I will take 2-1 to the couple changes. Certainly Lee Wynn will probably bring in some new life for New England if he's able to be available for that game, having to relocate during the midst of a pandemic and coming out of Florida and into the New England Boston area. Not sure what that looks like from a mandatory quarantine or flight situation, but if he's available, I think that'll bring some new life into the offense for New England Revolution. But I agree with you, Dan, you know, it's kind of surprising we hadn't brought up Philly just because they've been so consistent, so maybe they're not at the front of our minds when we talk about green lights. But this is a team that's clicking on all cylinders, and I think it's just a matter of, can they get a clean sheet in which Bark McKenzie plays well? Can Brendan Aaronson do something else great offensively to just continue to up those transfer fee demands that for those two players? And then on Sunday, Dan, we've got LAFC hosting Portland Timbers. This will be at 8 p.m. Eastern. Both these games that we're doing pick'ems for, folks, on ESPN Plus for most of the country geographically. Dan, who you got and why?
LAFC, I think they right the ship against a Portland team that's probably going to be scratching their heads on what to do without Sebastian Blanco. And it's going to put an emphasis on Valeri playing a lot more minutes as an older player. I don't know if, you know, can he have like the Nacho Piatti effect where he just balls out, you know, by himself? I don't know if he can do that anymore. But if there's anyone in this league who could, it could be him. But I just am not sold on Portland this close to having, you know, with their ups and downs and the fact that LAFC are going to be at home, it is a bit of a travel for Portland, especially same day down to LA. It'll be a little bit rough. So I'll say LAFC in this one by score of 3-2. I think it'll be entertaining, though.
I'll take LAFC 3-1 in this one. Like you mentioned, Dan, you know, it's interesting what's happened to LAFC the last couple of weeks, with it felt like that San Jose game being like the enough is enough, like slam dunk, or taking a team down to right the ship. And then, of course, you know, with what happened to them in El Trafico, albeit with a lot of that down a man due to Marc-Anthony Kaye rage quitting on the game. But I'll take LAFC in this one. I think, if nothing else, Diego Rossi is going to be pissed off, and I think they the Portland backline can be had in those situations. So I think Rossi goes off. I think he gets at least one goal and at least one assist, and it's 3-1 to LAFC. All right, Dan, tell our dear listeners about Icarus FC. Where can people find you on Twitter, and do you have any last words?
For Icarus FC, I just have to ask you, folks, are you tired of the same old uniforms and cookie-cutter templates from Nike and Adidas? Are you looking for unique, completely custom kit for your youth club, Sunday league squad, adult, or even pro team? Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price. With the motto, any design you want, seriously, let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. Last words, yeah, NFL season starts, hand egg starts on Thursday. Go 49ers. Here's my pick. Super Bowl, 49ers, Chiefs, rerun. 49ers get the best of them this time around.
Okay, what is different about the 49ers that puts them in a position to win the Super Bowl, Dan?
I think their offense is actually going to be a little bit better this year. I'm excited to see. Jimmy Garoppolo has been rumored to be a little bit more mobile. They've got a full year of Raheem Mostert gashing people, and I think the Raheem Mostert, you know, tape will be something that will be necessary. Also, you know, it is very hard for Super Bowl champions to repeat as Super Bowl champion. That's why there are so few of repeat Super Bowl champions. Now, there are is even worse history for teams who lose the Super Bowl to return to the Super Bowl. However, you know, I look at the landscape of the NFC, and I just don't know if I see another team that's really close to where the 49ers are at.
Alrighty then. Hand Egg returns at the college level as well. Well, I guess it's been back since a week ago Saturday, actually, if we're talking about Division One, but Division One Double A, Dan. But of course, the Miami Hurricanes, the five-time champions, the men who invented swagger, kick off this Thursday against UAB, the University of Alabama at Birmingham Blazers. We have a very interesting schedule. We will be playing at Clemson early on in the season. We've got FSU at home this year, looking to make it four in a row against Seminoles. Very excited to see what Manny Diaz and crew can come out in terms of actually competing for a conference championship. Full disclosure, I have us actually losing to Clemson twice. So I think we'll be a two-loss team through the regular season. So we'll be, what is that, 8-2, I think 9-2 with the 11 games with the non-conference. And then I think we will lose to Clemson in a rematch for the conference title. But really, as long as Notre Dame doesn't do anything in the ACC so that like their 1 year in a conference just confirms that they're a terrible team, and they've gotten away with it by not being a conference, I'll be content on that front. And of course, we have to beat FSU this year, but I'm very, very excited to see what that looks like. Obviously, college football, 15,000 fans allowed at The Rock, and no students, just season ticket holders. And I'm not even sure if the Band of the Hour will be allowed to be present for that. So it'll look very different, but very some form of football, and it's at a time when I think it's really exciting to see what Manny Diaz and the Miami Hurricanes football program is building towards for the long term, even if that doesn't come to for a number of reasons. Listeners, you can follow me. I want to thank our other sponsor, Roughneck Scarves. They are an official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. You can get your custom scarf for your group or .com. Roughneck Scarves has also come out with a number of options, both some generic template design neck gaiters as well as non-medical masks, both the ones with the loops that go around your ear on the ear, and then actually have the two straps Velcro to each other on the back of your neck that are very, very nice. I have one of them, and it's probably my favorite mask in the group of masks that I rotate out. roughneckscarves.com for any mask, any neck gaiter, any scarf needs, American soccer paraphernalia, customizable or generic. Listeners, you can follow me on Matt Pollard. Follow the podcast across all social media and the site across all social media platforms at Last Word SC. Check out all of our content at lastwordonsoccer.com. Rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Just search LWS Radio or Last Word on Sports, and you'll find us and a bunch of other great content from our Last Word family. Listeners, we'll see you when we see you.